Blog Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people and their essential love of justice.
Hi, welcome to the Kudzu Vine, a pre-Halloween show, one of the last two shows before Election Day, and a big show we have. This first half of the show, we're going to have Dr. Deborah Honeycutt, who's running for the 13th Congressional District, a Republican challenger against Democratic incumbent David Scott. She's going to join us. And then in the second half of the show, Ryan of the Daily Kingfish is going to join us, and Ryan, as you know, was supposed to come on the other week, but he had a car accident that night, so we'll just have to forgive Ryan, and that's why I welcomed him back, because he just usually brings the knowledge about Bayou politics. But welcome back, Catherine.
Thank you. I'm sorry I missed last week. It was a great show. I listened to it and really enjoyed it. You did great, you guys, all of you.
Well, thank you, and I've always found the ones I miss are usually the ones I like to listen to best anyway, because then I can hear everybody else's thoughts and knowledge. Welcome, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yeah. Well, we got a little bit to talk about before we start having our guests. Of course, I want to bring everybody up to date on what happened on Fox, but I think first, Catherine, you went to a major political fundraiser, and major meaning who was there, not actually the dollar price, which was quite affordable. Catherine, what can you tell us?
Well, it was wonderful. Bill Clinton was in town last night in support of a senatorial candidate, Jim Martin, and that we had a packed room at Trois Restaurant in downtown Atlanta, or I guess it's actually midtown Atlanta, and President Clinton was awesome. I've never actually seen him in person. I really didn't realize that until I was standing there. I was like, you know, I've never seen him. And he was really good, very supportive of Jim, who, of course, we all love. He's so great. And really good crowd, a lot of new faces that some familiar faces, of course, but a lot of new faces. Weish Fowler introduced him, and our DNC member, David Worley, also helped with the introductions. And President Clinton talked for about, 25 minutes or so about his longstanding relationship, friendship with Max Cleland and how important it is for us to get a Democratic senator from Georgia back in the Senate and how important it is for us to have a 60-plus majority in the Senate to help hopeful President Barack Obama really, change the, future of our country. And he was great. It was really good. He spoke for a long time, and everybody loved it. And then Jim Martin spoke for just a few minutes and thanked everyone for being there. And it was really, it's always fun for me to be in a room full of Democrats. I always enjoy it, and it was a really great event. They did a really good job. It was a lovely place, and like I said, nice, good crowd.
Yes, I actually saw Jim Martin just before you would have. He came to Rome as a part of a bus tour. I think he's going to be back around in this area in Cartersville and Calhoun tomorrow morning, but he came in, and I think they had to leave immediately, get that back down to Atlanta, but it sounded like a great crowd. How prophetic that Weish Fowler was in the House, given that people are now rumoring that this could be a runoff very much like 92. Tim, what do you think about those chances?
I think those chances are very good. And if you saw Matt Towery's site this week in the later Insider Advantage polls, he just came right out and said that he is prepared to say that one of two scenarios now is likely, that is either a runoff or an outright Martin victory. He has taken an outright Chambliss victory off the table. And if anybody should know polling in this state, it's Matt Towery, right?
Yes.
Yeah, and I think that if there is a runoff, it's gonna be crazy in Georgia. I predict right now that we'll have at least one more visit from President Clinton and Hillary and, I'm sure, Barack Obama.
And Joe Biden.
Yep. And Joe Biden.
Yep.
Because or Michelle Obama. Because there won't be any other, all the other Senate races, like in Minnesota, people have been talking about Minnesota, but Minnesota doesn't have runoffs.
No, so, because they're the Jesse Ventura party candidate, for lack of a better of knowing of that party. That person's going to actually most likely topple Will Stone and then put Franken in that day.
Right. Could you imagine, I was just going to say, could you imagine how intense this runoff would be if, say, if Martin looks like he could win, that he would represent Senator number 60?
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, yes. That's why, I mean, but it also means that, you know, Bush and McCain and everybody else is going to come here if there's a runoff.
Oh, certainly.
But I think a runoff.
Get back.
I have to tell you that my friends in the Martin campaign are not looking forward to a runoff.
No, I wouldn't either.
Neither am I.
No, as far as the political excitement, as far as you know, consultants collecting paychecks, you know, certainly there's some upside there. But as far as a race, you got to get all these folks back out. Now, maybe folks are like, hey, voting was way more fun than I thought it was. But then all these folks that waited in line for, you know, 2 and 3 hours, which that's what it is now, and it's on what it'll be like by Election Day, those folks may say, man, that was a real hassle. I had to take off work, X, Y, Z. And they don't understand that runoffs have a very different line waiting, if you will, as when I voted for the Senate runoff in the primary. I was voter number 20 in my precinct, and it was me and the poll workers.
Yeah, oh, that's how it was here, too.
Well, David, that's where...
Go ahead,
I was just going to say that's where Barack Obama comes in, because if he could come back to Georgia, it's his voters that we would need to energize again and get back to the polls, because it's his voters that are probably going to help push this thing into a runoff anyway, right?
That's
yes.
right. Absolutely
yes.
right.
And
I do think...
Senate seats don't have, do have runoffs because of libertarians, but congressional seats don't. And that's a good segue for our first guest, Dr. Honeycutt. You there?
Yes.
Hi, Dr. Honeycutt. Welcome to the Kudzu Vine. You're on with myself, David McLaughlin, Catherine Smith, and Tim Shiflett. Actually, I was born and raised in the 13th District. Was looking up your bio and saw your husband, Andrew, is a professor at Shorter College, where my wife and I graduated from.
Whoa.
Small world.
Small world.
Yes, Dr. Honeycutt. Well, I'm going to turn this over to Catherine to ask probably the first set of questions.
Thank you very much for being on with us tonight, Dr. Honeycutt. I know it's the final days of the election, and we really appreciate you taking the time to talk with us tonight. We really
thank you for having me, Catherine. Thank you.
We always like to find out from candidates, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself and why you decided to run.
Okay, Catherine, as you many of you already may know, I am, by education and training, a family medicine physician. And during the course of being in an employed physician and in private practice, I've taught medical students and residents, set up my own private practice, small business. And all along there, I said, my goodness, what is going on? When I couldn't get Medicaid to pay what it would cost just to give the person the vaccination, when patients would come in and really had great need, but your insurance won't pay for it. When setting up my business, I had to hire a lawyer. I thought, well, I've got my medical license right here, but then there was another license here and another license here and another regulation here and another regulation here. I just began to be the fed-up family physician. Someone asked me, well, what are you going to do about the fact that you're fed up with what's going on? And my immediate answer was, nothing. I'm a happy family doctor. But as things kept going and I watched what was going on in the community that I served, I ran a free clinic in Morrow, Good Shepherd Clinic, that's a plug for them, and I saw more and more need that was not being addressed by our current representation, and something kept pricking inside of me saying, if you don't do it, then who will? So it happened over a period of time, but here is where I've ended up.
Well, that's very helpful. Now, tell us a little, where did you go to school, and how long have you lived in the district?
University of Illinois. I tell people, yes, I was born above the Mason-Dixon line, but please don't hold that against me. Have lots of relatives from the Georgia and Louisiana area. I moved here in 1994 and began working at a small clinic in Palmetto, Georgia, at the edge of what is now the 13th District. After graduating from University of Illinois at Rockford, at the medical school there, and the family practice residency there.
Okay,
and,
great.
Mm-hmm.
David, you want to go ahead?
Yes. Dr. Honeycutt, thanks again for being on with us. I was reading some of the articles that were recently published, and they had one in the AJC talking about your campaign and all the money you'd raised.
Mm-hmm.
And in there you mentioned that you're not supporting Barack Obama, and that's you being a Republican, him being a Democrat. That wasn't a big surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But then you accuse him of black genocide. What did you mean by that?
Well, if many people are not aware that for every 10 African American babies that are born, 9 are aborted. As we look over the country in terms of abortions, although African Americans are somewhere a little bit more than 11% of the population now, they have almost 40% of the abortions. And this, for me, is absolutely unacceptable. Of the candidates running for president, Senator Obama supports abortion, and as you probably know, abortion is one of the planks of the National Democratic platform. But he also supports something that I find detestable, especially as a physician who has helped women through their pregnancies and has actually birthed babies, the partial birth abortion, where you deliver parts.
Excuse me, I just have to interrupt here.
Mm-hmm.
I think we all know that that is not a medical term. It is normally considered a late-term abortion.
Late-term abortion. That's the term we'll use then. Okay, I was using the term that most people know it as, not, you know, as the medical term that I know it as.
Let's use the, you know, official.
Oh, that's fine.
We'll
do late-term abortion. And I find that totally unacceptable for any people. But as we look since 1973, adding up all of the causes of death of African Americans, including AIDS, more have been killed through abortion than all of those causes of death totaled together. And I think that's a very much a concern for the African-American community. More and more people in the community are looking at it as, my goodness, what in the world are we doing to ourselves? That term has been used by a number of national people who have written books, and I borrowed that term from them, who have already used that term with regards to Senator Obama's campaign.
Well, usually the word term genocide refers to somebody that hates a group of folks, and Senator Obama is multiracial. Are you saying that you believe Senator Obama hates black people or has some kind of, I'm trying to look at the psychological term, where he dislikes the black part of himself? Is that what you're saying here?
No, that term goes back to the founder of Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger, and that was one of the things that she was interested in getting rid of people that she felt was not acceptable, and among those people were black people. That being, yeah, and so that's where that came from. And then, of course, with abortion being part of the National Democratic platform, it all runs together there.
Okay, just a striking language. That's why I wanted to get to the bottom of it.
Certainly, I appreciate that.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to Tim, but I will reserve the right to ask other questions if later in the interview, which Catherine may too.
Looking forward to it.
Go ahead, Tim.
Okay. Good evening, Doctor. Thank you for being on with us tonight.
Thank you, Tim.
Much has been made in the media of the fact that you have raised an astounding $4.3 million for this race, and that the raising of that money was done by a company named BMW Direct. Now, records, public records show that BMW actually kept the lion's share of the money that they raised, and my question is twofold. Is that a normal practice and why? And number two, how much of that money has actually been spent in your campaign?
Okay. Thank you so much for asking that question. You know, as a challenger who does not have a long political history, I didn't grow up in politics. I don't have anyone in my family who was a mayor or a governor or anything like that. It's very hard for a challenger to raise money. And so I was just so happy to have the services of BMW Direct, which is a direct mail company. There is no one who was more astounded than me that people all over the country with similar values, similar beliefs, believing in similar principles, would actually send my campaign some money. I was just absolutely astounded. And certainly using direct mail, and as you know, direct mail is you generate letters and you send the letters out as an appeal for persons to send a contribution. You send them an envelope to send the contribution in, all of that kind of thing. But as you know, that does become quite expensive because you do have to use our good old U.S. Postal Service. So when we look at that wonderful, and I am so pleased with that $4.3 million, when you look at that, already you've got to take about $1.3 million right off the top because our good old U.S. Postal Service got that. So I'm happy to have supported our government in that way in terms of supporting the U.S. Postal Service. And then, of course, the direct mail company has to be paid for all of their efforts. They're the ones that have the that buy the list. As you know, that's part of the process, getting lists of names. Who do you mail this out to? Buying lists from all different sources and that kind of thing. So I'm just really pleased as I look at what I'm able to spend here for the campaign. We're looking at $1.5 million or $1.7 million is what I think it will end up to. We're already up to, I believe it's $1.3 million that we're already up to. So I'm just, like I said, no one was more astounded that people all across the country would be so supportive of my campaign, and I'm thankful for each and every contributor to my campaign, and I look forward to making them proud with a victory.
And when you're talking about spending $1.5 million to $1.7 million in a campaign, you're talking about the kind of money that most incumbent congressmen in Georgia would actually be raising in a cycle. So what are you targeting that money toward? Is it mass media? Is it television? Mailings? What is the lion's share of the money in your campaign going toward?
Media, of course. All of the accoutrements in terms of the signs and the, all of those kinds of things that have to be put out. Certainly we have two offices to support, one on each side of the district. As you know, the district is quite large, quite large. And all of the other things that go into, you know, having a congressional campaign.
Okay, thank you. And I want to switch gears and ask you a question about something that you mentioned on your website.
Okay.
You say that you are a supporter of Neil Bortz's fair tax. Now, you know you run into being at odds with some nonpartisan groups like the AFFT, who in their studies have said that the poor, frankly, could not afford a 30% sales tax on basic necessities. How do you answer that?
Well, I had not read that, but certainly there is an answer to that. There's first of all, I'm not sure whether 30%, that's the first time I've ever heard that. But one of the things that we do have to remember, the fair tax, which is a consumption tax on new goods and services, would replace any income tax and payroll taxes, would replace those taxes so that the monies that you earned would come home with you, and then when you spent monies on new services and goods, that's when the tax would be paid. And the only percentage that I've ever seen printed was 23%. That's why I said I'm unfamiliar with your 30%. But the great thing about the fair tax is this is the tax for low-income people that would benefit them because of the prebate that they would get, the prebate that would, at the beginning of the month, give to them a check for the taxes on the new goods and services that they would be expected to spend during that month. Now, you know, of course, the calculations would be made on whatever, 200, 300% of the poverty line. I don't know exactly what that would be at this time. But all of those things are factored in. It's actually a very well-thought-out plan. And certainly we do need tax reform in our country. Because, as you know, we haven't always had an income tax. And when the income tax was instituted, people were up in arms. Oh, my goodness, taxing our income. So the income tax is not written in stone, never has been written in stone, had to have a constitutional amendment to do the income tax. So there's absolutely no reason that we can't say, tax reform, let's go with this fair tax. And even if we decided to try it for 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, nothing is written in stone, and certainly new ideas and putting new ideas in force in order to help the American people is what the American way is all about.
Okay, thank you, Doctor. David?
Yes, this past week in the Clayton News Daily, I was reading that Congressman Scott's campaign filed FEC charge against your campaign for coordinated campaigning with the Democrats for Good Government and a David Knox. What can you tell us about this charge, if you will?
Well, really, I can't tell you much of anything about the charge because I don't, I haven't been notified of anything other than, you know, hearing Mr. Scott's campaign held some sort of a news conference. I do know what this grew out of, though. This certainly grew out of a poll that was conducted by Cooper and Seacrest Associates from October 13th to 14th, showing that I'm within 5 points of Mr. Scott. So I knew, that, well, let me put it this way. I suspect that that has grown out of his desperation to throw mud onto my campaign. But like I say, other than that, I don't know anything about it.
Yes. Now, in that same article, you accused Congressman Scott of being a crooked politician, and that may not be the exact words you used, but what are your claim basis for that?
Well, actually, that was not my my claim. That was already has been, I think, since 2007, has been published, you know, in the press. Citizens Watchdog group has put out information that alleged this and show this. There are a number of sources I've known people that have simply put David Scott and corrupt in Google and just Googled it to get the information for themselves, and I would certainly encourage people who want more information on it, just find out for yourself, so you won't have to take it from me, but you can go directly to the sources. The AJC published an article on it, and so, you know, it's right there out in the free press for anybody that wants to see it.
Yes, I did something very similar. I just Googled corrupt David McLaughlin, and I found nearly 20,000 entries. So I just found I was corrupt by using your same method. So I'm going to have to do a little self-esteem work. Catherine, any questions for Dr. Honeycutt?
Yes, Dr. Honeycutt, I'd like to go back to the flat tax again. And, you know, I follow a lot of the material about this, you know, alleged savior to American citizens. And I'm still not sure how this would benefit, especially poor people. And my main question is, everybody's always talking about getting rid of the IRS. However, I don't understand how we can collect sales tax or consumption tax or, you know, however you want to refer to it, without having some bureaucracy similar to the IRS that would collect and report those taxes, as well as I'm a small business owner, you're a small business owner, and I would especially think that someone in the medical field, since currently we don't pay consumption taxes on medical services, that it seems like it adds a whole new level of responsibility to wholesale and to wholesale companies that don't collect sales tax and to service providers that have never collected sales tax. So how do we resolve those issues? How do we get rid of the IRS, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. Well, Catherine, I am. I just needed to make sure that you understood that it was a fair tax and not the flat tax that I am a supporter of. And with the fair tax, certainly some of the systems are already in place. We have businesses all over that already do collect taxes. You know, right now, today. But one of the things that I encourage people to do is to either read the book.
Well, I've read about it a lot, and these are my questions. What is your answer to how we are plan? How do you envision collecting and reporting those taxes? Are we going to have a bureaucracy similar to the IRS, or how is that going to work?
No, there would not be a bureaucracy similar to the IRS because there would be individuals would not have to report. And basically that's what the IRS is for, because individuals have to report, you know, by a certain date and that kind
of thing.
Well,
so do companies.
Depending on all
who are collecting
all
those taxes.
How does
the government get those taxes?
Through the tax being collected at the point of sale of new goods.
Right, I understand that, but so I'm a small business owner and I'm collecting taxes on all the items that I sell. Or you're a doctor and you're collecting taxes on all the services you provide. So where does that money? How do you submit that money to the government?
Oh,
and how is that processed?
As far as the exact process and whatnot of. You know, do you put it in the mail and send it to the government, or does it go from your checking account to the government? All of those things are worked out by minds that have better accounting and economic minds than mine. So, yes, it does require some systematic way of doing it, but in the same way that businesses collect sales taxes at this time, the basis of the infrastructure is already there, and all we have to do is build
that. Well, that's for state, though. That's not for national. That's not for federal taxes. That's for state taxes
and
local sales taxes.
The basis of the infrastructure is there, and all we have to do is adopt that best practice and use it federally. And certainly anyone that's, you know, absolutely against the fair tax will never see any benefit in it. And that's why I tell them, hey, read the book, And there's a lot of stuff on the internet. And, in fact, there's one site that answers all of those frequently asked questions. And you can bypass the questions that you don't have
except,
any interest
except, you see,
in
you're going to be representing us in Congress trying to pass this. So I'd like to think that you would understand how that process is going to work.
And as it gets closer to passing, and the minds that the accounting minds that work that out, I will be in such close contact with them, and they will be making sure that I have all of the pieces and the parts as they take it from the best practices of how it's done on the state level and make it done on the federal level.
Okay, great.
Well, Dr. Hunke, I want to thank you for letting us for coming on and joining us. And if people were interested in finding out more about your campaign, how could they do that?
They could go to honeycutforcongress.com, honeycutforcongress.com. And they can even send me an email there directly from the site.
Okay. Well, we thank you for coming on, and it was enjoyable having an interview with you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Doctor.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Catherine. Thank all of you. Have a great night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Yes, well, Dr. Honeycutt came on and gave us a good interview and answered a lot of issues, and certainly an upbeat lady. I guess one thing I did learn is I really I had heard something that Congressman Scott, you know, started doing more media buys, but I didn't know about that poll, and I actually looked it up in Roll Call magazine. Actually has the actual numbers, and it says that it was a Cooper and Sechrist Associates poll, which is a good polling firm. I believe it's the one Jim Martin incidentally used for his lieutenant governor's race. But it shows that Barack Obama is winning the district 56-35%, which actually I think to win Georgia, he's going to actually have to increase that number. But then the congressional race is 43-38, which means that Dr. Honeycutt is out polling John McCain by 3%. Any ideas on why this divide between Barack Obama's numbers and John McCain's race and the Scott Honeycutt race? Any ideas, Tim?
Do you happen to know the percentage of the African American vote in that district right off the top of
the head? It tells that the African American population is 41%, and the Hispanic population is 8. Actually, I thought it was higher than that, but I do know they added part of Cobb
took it away. I just noticed that you've got 11. All three of the African Americans outpolling the white guy. I mean, outpolling John McCain, and it would make sense then that the African American presence on the ballot is the strong suit in that district, wouldn't you
but
think?
But this is showing that basically, if let's just say, I mean, and obviously with two black candidates, it's not going to divide the same way. But let's say David Scott had all the black vote, then he's getting like no white vote. Now I don't think that's the case. I think obviously.
And by the same token, Dr. Honeycutt's got to be getting some African American votes there.
So there's probably some Obama Honeycutt voters, is what you're saying.
Right. Yeah. I think so.
Yeah. So it's just interesting
to think about.
I mean,
David Scott has had some bad press. You know, I mean, she's right.
Yeah.
There was some information. I can't remember all the details about his. There were some questions about some of the ways he spent some campaign money. I think it was in 2006 or 2007. So, I mean, that might be part of it. It would shock me that someone would vote Honeycutt Obama, since she seems to think Obama wants to, whatever.
Yeah,
anyway.
I mean, it's obviously makes more sense for people to vote Republican, Democratic.
No, but wouldn't it make more sense to vote Obama Honeycutt than it would be to vote Scott McCain?
Yes.
Unless you like established figures, I guess. But I will say this, I've always said, because David Scott in the last 2 to 4 years has become, you know, more liberal, more in line with the Democratic politics. prior to that, back when Zell Miller was in the Senate, at one time I want to say he was the most conservative black Democratic member of Congress. And
oh, yeah,
I always
was.
Thought he could have had somebody run to the right of him, I'm sorry, to the left of him on the Democratic primary, but
yeah,
I don't
Donzella.
Think there's as much room. Well, but somebody maybe that, I don't know. I know what you're saying. We've seen that race, though, and it didn't seem to be going much anywhere.
No,
so, you know, I'm trying to put it delicately. I mean, I'm just trying to say.
But that was,
I
think
that
was her intention, though. I think her intention was to run to the left of David Scott.
Yes.
I think that district is more conservative than most, I mean, for a Democratic district, I think it is more conservative, along the lines of Marshall, for example.
Yeah, I don't think that district has a lot of roots. I think it has a lot of folks that have moved in. It's more transient folks without long-term roots there in some of the counties. I mean, this is a district. I mean, the biggest county in the district is Clayton, and Clayton, Gil Noddy won Clayton back in 2000 against Matt Collins. I mean, that's how Democratic parts of this district are. That's why I do find it surprising. But, I mean, obviously, if you've raised some money and maybe she still has some money to actually campaign, not just pay off mail vendors and postage stamps, that's good. I believe we have a caller. Caller from 678. Welcome.
Matt Collins. Hey, this is Andre Walker. How are y'all?
Hey, Andre.
Andre.
How you doing?
Hey, Andre.
Hey, Andre. What you got for us?
Well, I was just listening to the interview of Dr. Honeycutt and also listening to your commentary, and basically a lot of what is going on is that there's a lot of fudging of the party affiliation on Honeycutt's ads and on her mailers, et cetera. She never identifies herself as a Republican. And there was an interview that was done that was, I forgot which station, but it was a foreign station that interviewed her and interviewed her, a supporter. And when the reporter said to the supporter, so you would vote for a Republican, the supporter said, oh, I didn't know she was a Republican. So that's, I think, what is going on. And the Scott campaign, for what it's worth, is going out and basically setting the record straight and letting the folks in the district know that Deborah Honeycutt is a Republican and that they shouldn't be fooled by the Republicans' dirty tricks.
Yes. Well,
that's really helpful. That helps us understand. Thanks, Andre.
It does. Thank
you. It was a little bit of a mystery to us why she is polling so high.
Yes, Andre, you can feel free to hang on, but we've got our other guest, which will probably be on with us for a while. But feel free to call in anytime and give us the knowledge you can.
All right, I'd be happy to do that.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andre.
Hey, well, welcome to Ryan from Louisiana. How you doing, Ryan?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, doing good. Ryan, this is the second time Ryan's joined us from the DailyKingfish.com, the premier blog for Louisiana politics. So it's good to have you back on. I'm glad you're driving situation's gotten better, and go ahead and start off with this interview. And a lot of the races, I'm sure, have changed, but the questions are still much the same. For the first time in Louisiana, candidates are running in separate party primaries. How do you see this has impacted the first round of races, and what interesting results have there been?
Actually, it didn't really make that much of a difference, because in the past you would have all the candidates, like you said, in a jungle primary. Everybody would run against everybody, and in conservative districts you would see generally two Republicans, like Louisiana 1 or Louisiana 4, you would see two Republicans move on to the general election. So the only difference that it had was basically that it's guaranteed the Democrats a spot in some of the more conservative districts, like Louisiana 1 and Louisiana 4. But we only had two real battles this past spring, this past fall, Louisiana 2 and Louisiana 4. In Louisiana 2, it's a Democratic district. It's going to remain Democratic after this election no matter what. And the result would have been the same as it was in this one. in Louisiana 4, rather than seeing two folks square off on Election Day, we're actually going to see two-party primaries because of Hurricane Gustav, which pushed the primaries back 1 month. So it pushed the entire schedule back. So you have a primary where everybody runs in each party, and then if nobody gets over 50%, there'll be a runoff between the top two finishers. And in both the Democratic primary and the Republican primary, there is going to be a runoff. In the Democratic primary, it is between Colonel Willie Banks and the Caddo Parish District Attorney, Paul Carmouche. And on the Republican side, it's between, I always forget the names, Chris Gorman and I can't remember the other guy's name.
Yes. Well, we're going to ask you more in depth about some of those races. I think Tim has one of the statewide races to ask about. Tim?
Yes, sir. We've seen Senator Landrieu doing very well and holding a good lead in the polls all fall. What's the situation in that race right now?
Well, like you just said, the polls have shown Senator Landrieu maintaining a double-digit lead for the last 3 months. Her opponent, Republican Treasurer John Kennedy, has, by all accounts, run a lackadaisical campaign. The Democratic tracker actually complained that he spends more time at the Landrieu headquarters than he does following John Kennedy. That being said, Senator Landrieu has always had competitive elections. Back in 1996, she beat Woody Jenkins by about 5,700 votes out of a 1.7 million cast. And in 2002, she beat Suzanne Hake Turrell by 42,000 votes out of about 1.2 million cast. This election will tighten, as it always does for her. And especially since Governor Jindal has decided to run a ad endorsing John Kennedy.
Okay. Now, another one of the big races there is in Louisiana 6. How's Representative Cashew doing there?
In the 6th, there's three candidates running. Congressman Don Cashew, who got elected in a special election to replace retiring Congressman Baker. Then he's running against Republican Bill Cassidy and independent Michael Jackson. Don Cashew beat Mike Jackson this spring in the special election primary on the Democratic side. Mr. Jackson has since left the Democratic Party and has climbed into bed with the Republicans, the main one being a gentleman by the name of Wayne Grigsby and his entire family. They have donated, incredibly, more than half of the money that Mr. Jackson had raised for this election by themselves. There are also rumors that he has paid for the billboards that are up all over Baton Rouge with Mr. Jackson's name on them, but there's no disclaimer, which is required by federal election law. You know, the paid for by, it's not on any of the billboards. Mr. Cassidy, if you can believe it, is actually less popular than Woody Jenkins in this district, mainly because he's not as fundamentalist a Christian that Woody is. And the very first ad that Mr. Cassidy ran in this election has been named by the Politico as one of the nation's top 10 worst ads of this cycle. Don has been running a very quiet campaign. He's been pressing the flash all over town, but not really advertising it and putting a positive ad in the air in the mail. It's going to be close. The most recent poll, however, did show Don with a double-digit lead, and that was in early October, but I'd be shocked if that was the margin come November 4th. He's basically getting attacked on both sides now. The National Republican Campaign Committee is throwing attack ads at him. Lane Grigsby is throwing attack ads at him, and they're coming from both sides. Grigsby's actually attacking him from the left, and the National Republican Campaign Committee is attacking him from the right. So I'm hopeful that the field operation that Cassidy has will pull it out, but it's going to be a very, very close election.
Okay. Catherine?
Thanks so much for being on with us tonight, Ryan. We really appreciate it. With the election so close, we appreciate any time people are willing to give us. How does it look for Obama in Louisiana, and how do you think that will affect the rest of the races?
Well, polls by Rasmussen actually show McCain beating Obama by 15 points or more. There were two polls in the last 2 months, one that showed McCain up by 16, the other that showed McCain up by 15. I don't buy it, mainly because Rasmussen will not release the breakdown of the party affiliation and race. So I don't know where they're getting their numbers. I don't know if they're underpolling black voters, if they're underpolling Democrats, if they're overpolling Republicans. I have no clue. But based on anecdotal evidence, this is an election that you this is an election for black voters that comes around in our history once every 400 years. This is the election that they're all going to vote in if they can. If they're legally registered, they will vote. I know somebody who actually, his grandmother's in the hospital. The first thing that she said, and she had to be taken to the hospital last week, the first thing that she said when she woke up was, "Will somebody please go get me an absentee ballot? I don't want to miss this election." This is I think it's going to be closer to that. Much closer than that. The thing that I think a lot of people are discounting is the fact that Obama is running national ads, and those ads are coming into Louisiana. They've been on CNN. They've been on Fox. They've been on MSNBC. They were even on the LSU football games.
You mean the Georgia football game?
Oh, let's not get into
ads
this.
Are there. As far as the effect on the down-ticket races, the turnout generated by his candidacy can only help the down-ticket races for the Democrats. There are some people who say it's going to help the anti-Obama, you know, racist redneck vote. I don't buy it. I think they're they see Obama and they don't think he's crazy because he's trying to, you know, spread the wealth, which most of these folks are poor, and they're like, yeah, we need a little bit of that now.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're just so depressed by the McCain campaign, they just thrown up their hands and said, forget about it, I don't care.
And Louisiana won, the first district. It's been kind of a surprise. Do you think Carlin has a chance of winning?
I do. And one of the reasons is I think Steve Scalise, to rip something from the headlines, is Louisiana's very own Michelle Bachmann of Minnesota. Because he pushes values rather than pragmatic solutions to our shared problems. One of the biggest issues/problems in Louisiana 1 is hurricane protection from Lake Pontchartrain. The entire district pretty much borders Lake Pontchartrain. And Steve Scalise has been missing in action when it comes to hurricane-related legislation and events. Back in July, when the Democrats came down, it was an event. It was a congressional trip organized by Representative Clyburn of South Carolina. He brought the House Democratic leadership as well as any congressman, member of Congress that wanted to come. And 20 of them decided to come down to Louisiana and see what was happening. They met with Governor Jindal. They met with Mayor Nagin. And for someone whose district is actually, when they were actually in his district, he decided to go off to Alaska for a photo op. Instead of pointing out, you know, hey, this is where this happened, this is where this happened. It's your own district, Congressman. Show up for it. When it comes to legislation, he just hasn't been there. He said he voted against the bailout. Now, the bailout, the Wall Street bailout was a terrible thing, and I think it should have been knocked down. But there are some folks in Louisiana that voted for it because it included money to help us rebuild from the hurricanes. Going back to Katrina, Gustav, Rita, and Ike. It included money for Louisianans, and he did not stand up and say, you know what, this is something we need. We need to make this happen. He wasn't there. He just decided to take the easy, populist way out and say, I'm voting against it because I don't like this bill. Instead of saying, hey, there is some good stuff for us in this. I need to vote for it to help my district.
Yes, looking at Louisiana,
Jim Harlan has actually been pretty good. He's actually got his own hurricane plan, which includes building a gate on Lake Pontchartrain, modeled after what the British have done in Great Britain, what the Danes have done over in Holland, and what we actually did here in this country in the 1950s after a hurricane ripped through Providence, Rhode Island. We actually have a gate that shuts off the Atlantic Ocean from Narragansett Bay, which I think it's called, up in Rhode Island. And it works. And it's modeled right after that.
Go ahead, David.
Yes. Looking at Louisiana 4, I know the race you said that's in a two-sided runoff. Can Colonel Willie Banks pull the upset, or will Paul Carmouche, who was the favorite going in, win that seat or win that nomination? And then what are the Democratic chances after the runoff in the special?
One of the candidates in LL4, I actually think Colonel Willie Banks can pull off an upset. Especially if Paul Carmouche, the Caddo Parish District Attorney, chooses to stay in Caddo Parish, like he did during the first half of this thing, instead of heading down to Leesville and the Fort Polk area, where voters are going to see Colonel Willie Banks as the name of the candidate, and they're going to go, Colonel, I'm going to vote for the guy. And I actually think that Willie Banks can pull it off. That's why they're the runoff.
And then what's the chances after that against the Republican?
As for the Republican side, I think Chris Gorman's going to pull that one off. He's got a lot of money. He's self-funding. And he seems to do well with the fundamentalist Christians. I mean, one of his ads was like, one of the biggest issues I'm concerned about is abortion. I want to end it. And the Republican voters in that district said, I like what the guy had to say. I'm voting for him. So I think he's actually going to pull it off, mainly because he's put over $1 million of his own money in the race at this point.
Yes. Now, who wins that race and actually serves in Congress then?
Now, that's the race for Congress.
Yes. So who wins? Because we have the Democrat or Republican after the runoffs. Who wins the runoff?
I don't know. I'm not sure, to be honest. I mean, this is a district that was Republican for a long time. And the turnout is not going to be generated. There's going to be no turnout generated by an Obama candidacy at that point. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. I think it'll be a very close election, much closer than it's ever been in the past. I think the Democratic candidate that has the best chance of winning is Carmouche, but he's got to show a little bit of fire in the belly. If he gets into the runoff, I think he's got a very good shot of winning in general. But he's got to get into the general.
But wouldn't Colonel Banks, also being African American, do a better job of turning out Obama voters?
Colonel Willie Banks is an African American candidate. He will turn out. They will show up. And if the black voters in that district know that Colonel Willie Banks is an African American, they're most likely going to vote for him.
Yes. Well, I guess we saved the best for last. How did Helena Moreno make the runoff in the New Orleans district? And then can she defeat William Jefferson?
I hate to be crass, but she won because she's white. If you take a look at the exit, if you take a look at the results from the first primary, you'll notice that Helena Moreno won the districts that had a majority of white voters, and she did very well in mixed-race districts because white voters pulled the lever for her. She did very poorly in districts that were a majority black voters. And frankly, I can't see her beating Jefferson. She has, when I last checked about a week ago, she had $6,500 in the bank. I'm sure that she's replenished that because she does have a little money saved from her time as being a newscaster on one of the new stations here in New Orleans, so she's very well known. But I think we're going to be back at this sometime in the spring after Congressman Jefferson gets convicted, and the voters in New Orleans are going to be back at it, trying to figure out who's going to succeed him.
Yes. Well, Ryan, thank you. You brought a ton of knowledge about Louisiana politics, as always. And anytime things go on, we want you on the show. And I have a feeling if we have some of these elections that go past November, we're going to call on you again.
Yeah. Okay. I'd just like to make one more point. One of
sure.
the races I'm really excited about that I didn't get a chance to mention was the race in the 7th District. You've got Congressman Charles Bustani, who I like to call Lord Bustani because he tried to actually buy an English title of nobility back in the 1990s. But Mr. Bustani's facing a very, very populous challenge from a relatively well-financed Democratic challenger, a gentleman by the name of Don Cravens Jr. He is a state senator, and he is, I believe he's in the National Guard as well as a volunteer police force. He's on it, and he's the captain. So he's very well-placed for this district. Anyhow, Lord Bustani, as I call him, voted yes on the Wall Street bailout. Yes to increasing his pay in the House automatically by tying it to inflation under the Republican leadership when they did that back in 2005, I believe. And somehow he voted against increasing the minimum wage, which ties in quite nicely with the populist message that Mr. Cravens is pushing. He's like, look, this guy voted on the bailout. He voted to give $700 billion with very little taxpayer protection away to the banks. He voted to increase his pay to $170,000 a year, which is where it is now. And he voted against giving y'all a minimum wage increase. So I think Mr. Cravens has a good shot. It's going to be based on turnout, and it's going to be an interesting 9 days, 8 days.
Yeah.
See what happens.
Well, I'm glad you brought that race to our attention. It does sound like another good one to watch. Sounds like all the districts practically in Louisiana that are competitive are interesting to watch.
Yeah, they're all going to be competitive. I have high hopes for Don pulling it out, Mr. Cravens pulling it out. I'm hopeful that Jim Harlan can pull it out, but it is a very, very Republican district. That used to be the home of David Duke. I believe he still makes his home there. He was actually a representative in the state house from that area. And Steve Scalise has been playing down and dirty by running an ad that attempts to tie Jim Harlan to Jeremiah White.
Yeah.
And if the voters in that district decide to vote on their hopes rather than their fears, Jim's got a great shot. So we'll see what happens. Senator Landrieu will pull it out. There's no doubt in my mind about that, but it's going to be a close one.
Yes. Okay, well, thanks again for joining us, Ron.
Okay, thank you for having me, and there will be a front page post on Daily Coast about Louisiana next Sunday, so check it out.
We will. Thank
okay.
you, sir. Right.
Thank you.
Yes, Ron from the Daily Kingfish, always bringing us some information. Interesting that he mentions, you know, one of our former guests, Willie Banks, that he can pull it out. Really kind of cut to the core on the New Orleans district and many more races, even bringing races that we had forgotten. But I guess the reason is because, really, like I said, every race in Louisiana is competitive that actually has two candidates. The only race that doesn't have two candidates is the Blossaw seat. And he doesn't have an opposition, so he can't be competitive. Although I don't think that one would be, given that he's a Democratic incumbent of high regard, unlike Mr. Jefferson. Well, we're winding down the show. We have one more. We talked about it last week. We're going to go ahead and have that open mic night, if you will, where we want candidates to call in. So if you want to go ahead and reserve your time, probably just going to be quick and fast, maybe 5 minutes at a time, not long interviews like we usually do, please email us with that, and we'll get the schedule going. You can email me at david@electu.com. Also, if you just get onto one of our posts on either Tondi's Tavern or Blog for Democracy, you can probably mention that you want to be on there, and we'll see it. Yeah. Catherine and Tim, anything that y'all got on y'all's mind before we go?
Vote.
Please.
Vote this week.
Yes, I've already voted. Voted early. I think a lot of people are doing that to kind of get out of the way so some of the more novice voters won't have quite as long a line. But we'll join you for the last show before Election Day.
Thanks, guys.
Good night.
Good night.